Welcome to the I'm All Over the Place podcast. My name is Dara Star Tucker, and my co-host today is...
Greg Bryant. How's it going, everybody? It's been a while.
It has been a good little while, but we are back at it. There's been some life changes and life shifts that have happened that have kind of taken us out of circulation for a minute, but we are so glad to be back.
But you've never really been away. tell them where to find you on Instagram.
Instagram is Dara Tucker B, D-A-R-A-T-U-C-K-E-R-B. TikTok is Dara Star Tucker. That's Dara with one R and Star with two. My friend Miss Indy Ari told me to say it that way, so I'm going to say it that way from now on. Dara with one R and Star with two. Dara Star Tucker on TikTok. And then on YouTube, I believe I'm youtube.com/Dara Star Tucker. So, and then there's links in my bio to everything that I'm doing. And, you know, we've got music out and all kinds of stuff.
Music on the way.
So if you just feel like, yeah, knowing more about what I and even Greg have going on, I would suggest clicking that link tree in my bio.
Right on. I'm GB_Watchman. Instagram is the best place to find me. But glad to be here with you again today. Proud for you. Proud of you as always.
Oh, thank you.
What do we got to talk about today?
Well, today I think we're going to focus on, I think we're going to call this one Kanye, Kyrie, and Dave.
Okay.
I think that's what we'll call it.
Okay.
Kanye, Kyrie, and Dave. Not to say that the entire subject matter will necessarily be about them, but we want to use them as a launching point to get into a discussion about the state of Black and Jewish relationships in the United States, which is a really fraught subject, as a lot of people know. And I recently did a breakdown, one of my first breakdowns back after the hiatus. We've moved recently. We were in the New York area. Now we're in the Philly area. We've been out of circulation with the podcast for a couple of months. And so this is my first real kind of earnest breakdown since the move has happened. And it was a bit of a doozy, I would say, you know, in terms of the response. I can't say that it necessarily went viral anywhere.
It has on a couple of platforms.
Yeah, I guess Instagram. You could call that virality. The really cool thing is that that Diddy posted it. There's been several people that have posted it, but that was probably the coolest one for me.
Yeah,
is that he posted it, and it's gotten some mixed response. I like to remind myself that a lot of the folks in the middle, the moderates, and the folks that are, you know, not in the extremes, tend to be the quietest. So I have to remind myself that the reception to the video has been, you know, it has sparked some folks on the, I would say, the extreme ends of things on both sides. But the folks in the middle seem to appreciate what I'm bringing and the spirit that I brought it in. So we want to talk about it today.
Sure. Let's take a look at it first. This is called, what do you call this breakdown, actually?
It's called What Happened to Relations Between the Black and Jewish Communities.
Here it is.
So comedian Dave Chappelle is in hot water for a monologue that he did on SNL that was widely regarded as anti-Semitic. Basketball player Kyrie Irving, who's known to have a proclivity for conspiracy, tweeted a link to a film that contained anti-Semitic disinformation and was eventually suspended by the Nets. And we all know what Kanye is up to. I recently did a video on Black writer Eric Montes' accusations that Norman Lear had cheated him out of the profits of several of the shows that he had had a hand in creating. The torrent of anti-Semitic comments under that video left me reeling. So where is all this coming from? Jewish people were at the vanguard of the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s. So what happened to relations between the Black and Jewish communities? I'm Dara Star Tucker, and this is The Breakdown. Now, I want to first acknowledge that it is possible to be both Black and Jewish, since Judaism is a religion, and like Blackness, being Jewish is also a cultural marker. But for the purposes of this conversation, we'll focus on Jewish people who identify as white. Historically, Black and Jewish people have been natural allies. There is a common history of extreme persecution and triumph in the midst of adversity. And for a while, these commonalities seem to create a natural alliance between the two groups. In the world of arts and entertainment, Black and Jewish people have collaborated to create some of the most significant and lasting works of all time. Oh lady, oh lady, oh lady, be good to me. And it's safe to say that the world of comedy would essentially be non-existent without the contributions of Black and Jewish people. Historically, Jewish people people in America have been politically progressive, and they were some of the first to break down racial barriers. During the initiative to register black voters in Mississippi in 1964, which came to be known as Freedom Summer, more than half of the lawyers that represented those civil rights workers were Jewish. Two Jewish workers, along with a black man, were murdered by the Ku Klux Klan for their participation in that movement. But there's a general feeling that relations between the two groups began to sour in the late 1960s. Many hold the black nationalist movement responsible for this shift. Leaders within the Nation of Islam, in particular, espoused explicitly anti-Semitic views and promoted very dangerous ideologies around the origin of the Jewish people in America and the threat that they represented to black people. This anti-Jewish fervor within a certain segment of the black community is seen by many as the beginning of the end of the Black and Jewish Alliance. But there's more to the story than that. When Jewish people began to migrate en masse to the U.S. in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, they, like Polish and Irish immigrants, weren't seen as white in the U.S. That was a designation that was strictly reserved for Anglo-Saxon Protestants. But right around the middle of the 20th century, America extended an uneasy ceasefire and effectively granted them whiteness. Whiteness with an asterisk, but whiteness nonetheless. Since race as we know it is a social construct and not a biological reality, yeah, they could do that. And so black people who could not change their names or features and be absorbed into the general population began to find allyship elsewhere. The shifting political tides contributed greatly to this as well. Rather than being seen as struggling minorities fleeing persecution, the Jewish people were now representatives of the American dream. They were an immigrant success story. But by the late 1960s, the United States, and specifically the black community, was becoming more aware of the Palestinian struggle. It was only a matter of time before the Nation of Islam began to loudly assert that Jewish people in America were complicit in the oppression of Palestinians. And black folks identified with that struggle. Now, there are two realities that we need to be able to hold simultaneously. Number one, the Jewish people belong to an historically marginalized group that has been systematically persecuted for simply existing for thousands of years. And number two, for the last 70 years, Jewish people have been a part of the dominant racial caste in the U.S. and therefore are able to participate in and perpetuate white supremacy. It would stand to reason that black entertainers in particular would be acutely aware of the history of exploitation of black art and artists by unscrupulous managers, agents, and industry heads. That's a history that can't be explained away. But in our zeal to call out white supremacy in all of its forms, we as black people must remember that religious and cultural persecution are tools of the oppressor. We cannot find true liberation in allowing ourselves to become the mouthpiece for someone else's holy war. Our fight isn't against Jewishness, it's against white supremacy. And the paradox is that that has historically been a shared battle between the black and Jewish communities.
Tell me, number one, as bubbling as a cauldron as this is, what really led you to address this topic and make this your comeback for the breakdown?
Well, the current events, you know, the fact that this is a relevant topic right now in the culture, because there are incidents that seem to keep popping up where we have black entertainers who are making statements that have been not received well. You know, we've got Dave Chappelle, we've got Kyrie Irving, we've got Kanye West, but last year it was Nick Cannon. Can't remember the other guy who ended up getting in some trouble last year along with Nick Cannon. And it's these haven't been the first incidents, nor will they be the last. And so just kind of observing what's been going on and how much more common this seems to be than it used to. I don't know, just in my perception, I don't know that I was seeing a ton of this, like, anti-Semitism out in the open in our community before, you know, a few years ago. It happened, but it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't like it is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then also I will say part of the impetus for me was a video that I made, as I mentioned in that video, about Eric Monte, you know, who was, he says he was cheated out of a bunch of royalties and credit for some Norman Lear shows. Norman Lear, who was Jewish, who I pointed out in the video was Jewish, to create a contrast between his culture and the culture that he was depicting in these shows
that, Norman was depicting.
Yeah, that Norman was depicting.
Which was the African-American, black American
culture. Right. I went out of my way to say, hey, this is a Jewish guy and he's creating all these black shows. And it kind of didn't really make sense to me that he would know enough about our culture to be, you know, known for creating so many black shows. And then,
so there had to be a Black idea person. There had to be a Black source for him to be able to even do the show in the first place.
And that was my point. And I feel like it was just taken and misconstrued by a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. There were several Jewish people who seemed to take that very, very badly, because it really did create an atmosphere of just horrible anti-Semitism in my comments. Mm-hmm. And I felt bad at being, you know, basically a host for a forum where people could just air all of this stuff out. It didn't feel good.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's Joseph M. Wanted with the Christitutionalist Politics. Tune in for the upcoming episode for May 4. Issue, Never the Issue, as well as guests Peter Serafin, Rosemary Downer, Don Gallade, Gista the Rapper, Cy Young, Jason Perry, and upcoming Jack Hagar, Andrew Thorpe King, Trent Rock, Ed Temple, Chris Morehouse, and more. Please tune in to Christitutionalist Politics. God bless.
But that wasn't your intent. And I think that's a point that we need to make, I guess, starting with Dave Chappelle. There was a recent monologue on Saturday Night Live, and it struck some people as brilliant. It struck some folks as topical. It struck some other folks as anti-Semitic. Is a person always responsible for the factions that embrace their content? That's my question to you.
No, you know, I don't think anybody would quite be that rigid, you know, in simply stating.
Even for you in making the breakdowns.
Right. I think most people understand, like, if somebody takes your stuff, and this is happening quite a bit, even in with the video that I just put up, you know, people take it and go where they want to go. It's amazing how things can look differently based upon who's viewing them.
Yeah.
And sometimes people are just seeing and hearing what they want to see and hear.
Right.
So, you know, we know people are going to take what they want to take from Dave Chappelle's routine, and he's not, you know, it's not necessarily something you could put on him if a white nationalist is emboldened by what they heard him say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have to balance it out. It's like, well, we are aware that these factions exist in the country. And so, you know, we have to proceed with sensitivity. We have to proceed sometimes with caution.
Exactly.
You're like, well, you know, I don't mean that by what I said or by what I put out. Mm-hmm. But we know we got some crazy folks in this country.
Sure.
You know, let's just be aware of it, I guess.
Sure. So are we at a place in society now where the person, the ethnic group, is able to move their own line and no one else has rights to the line? More specifically, Black people are the ones that call out racism for Black events. Nobody else is allowed to do that. Jewish people are allowed to say anti-Semitism for offenses against Judaism. No one else is allowed to say what that line is. Are we at that point in society where it's basically hands off? We need to respect someone's calculation of where they feel offense lies.
I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that there should be a sense of agency within each of those communities to say, this is offensive. Mm-hmm. I find this offensive. This is where the line is. And just because the line was in one place in 1979 doesn't mean it's going to be in the same place. There may be things that are considered racist now that were not considered racist,
I can understand that,
you know, 40 years ago. Yeah. There will be things that are considered anti-Semitic now that people may not have called out 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it is not up to us as Black people to draw the line for Jewish people to say where that line is. That's how I feel. Now, can we call it out when we see it? I am a Black person who was calling out anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I feel like any Black person should feel empowered to call out anti-Semitism when they see it. A Jewish person should be empowered to call out anti-Blackness when they see it, particularly amongst their own people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But to determine where the lines are, you know, that is something, as far as I'm concerned, that should be left to that community.
Right.
You know, I don't get to say this is or isn't anti-Semitic. You know, in response to a Jewish person saying this isn't this. It's like, well, you know, we allow them, and they're not a monolith, but we allow them to collectively decide where those lines are. And we don't get to push back against that. We just get to say, I respect that assessment. Mm-hmm. I respect your assessment, you know, and you can have your own opinion about it. Everybody's got opinions.
I think
we don't get a vote.
Exactly. I don't think we can say whether or not it's anti-Semitic, but we can also say whether we disagree. For instance, I'll be honest, it's not up to me to say whether Dave Chappelle was anti-Semitic or not. I personally found his monologue to be one of the most brilliant things that he's done.
And I did too.
In several years.
I think a lot of people felt that way. A lot of people who are not within the Jewish community, and maybe some that are, mm-hmm. actually felt that way. Mm-hmm. You and I sat and watched it together, yeah. and we laughed, and it was like, I was really tense and uncomfortable because it's like, oh, this is Dave Chappelle. Is he going to intentionally say something to piss people off? I was a little tense, but by mm-hmm. the time we got to the end of it, it was like, wow, he pushed some buttons.
Yeah.
But he did
well.
But
he landed the plane.
Yeah.
Only to be met on Monday morning with anti-Semitic. He was anti-Semitic.
Being anti-Semitic. We were both surprised, I have to say.
Yeah.
We were both surprised. Yeah. But I'll say, when I watched a comedian whose name is Judy Gold, who wrote a book about free speech and basically, you know, not censoring people. She's Jewish and she has a book about, you know, free speech. Mm-hmm. And she was interviewed on CNN on their morning show. And she is a friend of Dave Chappelle's. And she said, you know, we need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. This is not, you know, she wasn't necessarily trying to shut him down.
Right.
But she didn't give him a pass. Mm-hmm. And then to listen to Jon Stewart, who, again, knows Dave Chappelle mm-hmm. and is a comedian and is Jewish, who pretty much said the same thing on the Stephen Colbert show. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to step back and just be prepared to listen, since we want people to listen to us. It's like, mm-hmm. sometimes it is our job just to listen. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes we want to push back against anyone telling us that we have to be prepared to show sensitivity yeah. to another group of people. And it's like, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, I feel the same way about the LGBTQ community. It's like, Black folks want to push back against that. Sometimes I will straighten a fellow Black person out about that. 'Cause I'm like, If we're not all free, then none of us are free. Mm. Until we are all free, none of us are free. We have mm-hmm. to be willing to push back mm-hmm. against this kind of bullying attitude and realize
yeah.
that we can be in the majority in certain senses. If it's religious in the United States and we are Christians, Christianity is the dominant religion. If you are a Christian and you're pushing against someone who's a part of a minority religion, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm not sorry. You know, and if you are a heterosexual person and you're pushing and bullying on somebody who's gay, or you're a cisgender person and you're pushing and bullying on somebody who's trans, you know, that the power dynamic has shifted. And we have to be able to understand how these roles can change, even within, you know, from relationship to relationship, mm-hmm. Even though we are a mm-hmm. Historically marginalized people
yeah.
as Black people.
I think the thing that we have to also take into account is that white supremacy is alive and well.
It is.
And I feel that a lot of African-American people, Black American people, are more hip or awake, I'll say, to protecting their own mental health, to protecting their own economic mobility, to protecting their own sovereignty as autonomous human beings with families or solo. And so if the, you know, desire is to be able to move away from something or someone that they feel is historically hurtful or harmful, they need that space. We need that space. But I don't feel necessarily that using, as you said earlier in the piece, the tools of the oppressor, you know, the name calling, you know, the quick surmise and generalizations that everybody is like this. You know, your culture did this to me, so you're like this. I don't think that's a proper assessment of necessarily of how we have to move. But I do accept and I do recognize the sovereignty and sometimes the learning, you know, that we benefited from, you know, groups that everybody in the majority wasn't really trying to check for. You know, they taught us things. We had to unlearn a lot of things that were quite frankly oppressive to our minds and to the way we viewed ourselves in our self-esteem. So, yeah, I do recognize the ability and the need to be able to remove ourselves in certain instances from things that we feel are hurtful and to be able to say truth to white supremacy. It doesn't matter who it's coming from. If it's coming from another Black person, if it's coming from a Jewish person, if it's coming from a person with, you know, an Israeli background, white supremacy is alive and well, and it must be resisted on every hand. And for people to ignore or deny that they can feed into white supremacy is blind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I fully agree and said that in the video, which it feels like many people chose to ignore.
Yeah.
The comment sections have been just a cauldron. It's just been, it's been very interesting to sift through these comments over the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
And part of it is saddening. And part of it's angering,
mm-hmm.
and part of it's heartening, because it's like I have to remind myself, you know, 80% of the comments have been positive.
Yeah.
Certainly on TikTok, I think the overwhelming majority of comments have been very positive. But Instagram and Facebook have been another story altogether. And I think that may have something to do with the fact that some of these people found me through the Eric Montes story.
Yeah, that's true.
And are disappointed to hear me push back against
anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semitism within our own community.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff is seen as I was telling you, Greg, yesterday.
Mm.
Jewish people, they see this. When I was doing research for this video, a lot of the sites that I was running into, you know, to try and get just an assessment of where the state of, you know, anti-Semitism within the Black community, these are things that have actually been measured.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-Semitic sentiment,
yeah,
within certain racial groups. These things are being measured, and a lot of the information about it I found being reported, not the studies being done by, but it being reported on Jewish sites. Jewish people are keenly aware of this as being a phenomenon within our community, and the fact that it is on the rise, and it makes them, as we should understand as Black people, it makes them really nervous,
mm-hmm.
makes them very nervous that mm-hmm. they themselves are going to be subjected to random acts of violence. I mean, I think someone was arrested today in New York who was plotting to do harm to Jewish people. And I think that he was a white supremacist.
I believe. He wasn't a Black person.
Which, I mean, does it really matter? Because if you're...
Well, it's all wrong. It's all wrong to any kind of random acts of violence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't, you know, do they care if it's coming from, you know, kind of a more Black nationalist perspective, or if it's coming from white supremacy? It doesn't matter. It's anti-Jewish hate.
Exactly.
It's anti-Jewish hate. And I had a lot of people also push back against that word. Anti-Semitism. We need to stop using this word because the Palestinians are Semites. Anti-Semitism is a word that was created by the Germans to describe hatred for the Jews. And there it was called Judenhass. We translated it as anti-Semitism, or we transferred it to the word anti-Semitism. But that is exactly what it means. Hatred for Jews. So if, you know, people try to get you in some kind of a semantical debate about what it is, and that Black people, because many people, and we'll get into that, some of the theories about the origins of Black people and who the true Hebrews are. And it's like, well, we can't be anti-Semitic because we are Semites. That's not the case. Anti-Semitism is expressly defined as hatred of Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we can be anti-Semitic. A lot of people pushed back and said, because we are Black and we are not, you know, we do not hold power in this country. And the whole argument that's used to push back against the idea that Black people can be racist, which I have my opinions about, because race involves power dynamics, and we can't be racist against Jewish people because they are, you know, white. It's like, well, no, this is hatred towards someone specifically relating to their ethnicity or their religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is not a construct. I've been told that we don't say social construct anymore. We say colonial construct.
Hmm.
That's an interesting conversation that's being had right now.
Mm-hmm.
But race, as we know it, is a colonial construct.
Yeah.
And so therefore, we are not at the top of that cast in terms of race.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not able to wield power against someone. And it is very difficult to behave in a racist way towards someone who does hold power and wield power.
Exactly.
As a part of that cast. But
when it comes to
anti-Semitism, that's not the case. This is a person's ethnicity. This is a person's religion.
That's true.
And it is very possible for you as a Black person to hold hatred towards someone because of their Jewishness.
Exactly.
And if you do,
it is,
the actual definition of that is anti-Semitism. So yes, we can be anti-Semitic.
It is dangerous bigotry. And that is something to avoid at all costs. Like you say, we don't have a system to oppress anyone with. But it is dangerous bigotry that, yes, we are capable of wielding, unfortunately. I want to talk about also or ask you about the Kyrie situation.
Mm-hmm.
I have my thoughts about it, and I definitely feel like the young brother stepped in the wrong direction. His punishment, I have my thoughts about that. What do you think about the punishment and in general, like the stance on this is happening in a certain era? Was he unfairly sanctioned?
I really should throw that question back at you because I just got through going on and on about my opinions.
I personally feel that his punishment was excessive. I also understand that when he signs a contract with the National Basketball Association, which is not a black organization, which is owned by, you know, individuals, he's beholden to the rules of that organization. And they also have the ability to take away his gain when he is in violation of certain practices. But I do find it, you know, somewhat excessive, being that, yes, it is happening now. Anti-Semitism needs to be shut out. They see what he said as a certain type of threat. So within the environment of Kanye and in the environment of some others, he was targeted in a way that says, we expect this, you know, not to happen.
Yeah, I mean, he
again.
Didn't say anything. He tweeted out a video. That's also, you know, something we should point out.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't actually say or do anything,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. But I would say, yeah, you're right. It has a lot to do with the climate, because this is not a singular event in the minds of a lot of people. This is connected.
Mm-hmm.
It has a broader connection to this, you know, ever increasing frequency of these sort of, you know, I'll call them dog whistles. Some of them are much louder than a dog whistle.
Mm-hmm.
Of anti-Semitism within the black community. And yes, they made an example out of him because it was so, it got to be such a public issue. You know, it just ramped up and up and up. And I think if he had come out and said, you know, I disavow that, or I apologize for sending that out, that was not something I should have put out there, he wouldn't have been suspended, you know? But I think he felt like he was dealing with some persecution.
Mm-hmm.
And so he dug his heels in and he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
He did pledge money to the Anti-Defamation League, but he did not apologize. So in my estimation, in terms of just the PR, you know, management side of what he did, Kyrie Irving, he tweeted out a film that is strangely still on Amazon Prime that contains some disinformation about the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
It contains, you know, a false quote by Hitler, saying that black people are the real, or Negroes were the real Jews, and just a lot of information that has led to, in my estimation, some of the beliefs around the Hebrew people, the Jewish people, and, you know, who the real people are, that has led to a lot of the division, I would say. I don't even really like using that word when it comes to issues like this, because sometimes division is necessary to rectify the wrongs of the past. So I don't think division is something we need to all freak out about necessarily. But it's just led to some dangerous belief systems, I believe. And, you know, he didn't make any commentary about the film. He just tweeted it out.
Right.
But I feel like there's just some education that needs to happen within our community, where we are understanding, first of all, when we run across information that is not entirely historically accurate.
Mm-hmm.
There were literal fallacies within that film. I mean, regardless of what your beliefs are about who are the real Hebrew people and all of this stuff, that stuff can be debated till the end of time. I'm not somebody who invests a whole lot of energy into that kind of thing, because that's religious belief. You can't debate somebody's religious belief or their accounts of history that have been relayed to them by someone that they respect.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a can of worms that is exploding in my comment section right now. But, you know, someone can believe what they want to. And I think if he had just tweeted out a film about, you know, Black people being a part of the lineage of the Hebrew people or something like that, I don't think he would have gotten in trouble. I don't think that's what he got in trouble for.
Right.
I think there was, and I will say I have not seen the movie, as I don't think a lot of people who are criticizing it have actually seen it.
Right.
But I have read some synopses of what is in the film.
Yeah.
And some of it's just, you know, in my estimation, is wrong-minded.
Yeah.
And can be dangerous. You know, if you want to believe what you want to believe and you're just kind of doing your thing.
Yeah.
And there's people that believe all kinds of off the wall stuff.
That's true. That's true.
In this country in particular, we love wacky little cultish stuff in the United States of America. But when your beliefs start to cross over a line where they are potentially causing harm to other people. Mm-hmm. And that can be said of a whole lot of religious beliefs, by the way.
Yeah.
But when you know, you tweet out something that specifically, you know, this film has Holocaust denial as you know, a part of its content. Mm. Why it's still on Amazon, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Kyrie dug his own grave with that one, because he refused to just make an apology for it. And he could have done that way long time before he did, and he wouldn't have been suspended. So no, I don't feel like I don't feel like the punishment was too severe. No, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been interesting. And even in a musical example, I forget the gentleman's name. He was scheduled for SNL.
Oh, Morgan Wallen.
Morgan Wallen.
Right, the country singer.
And he was dismissed from SNL because he refused the... He acted,
said the N-word. They caught him drunk at his house and he said the N-word.
Yeah, and something about he did not observe COVID protocol at the time either. Something like that. And yeah, he was, you know, off the show. But didn't he get another crack at the show?
No, I don't
he did
so.
Not.
Mm-mm. He's been not. Embraced by the country community.
Yeah,
he was just on the CMAs.
Yeah,
no, he's not been back on SNL.
I mean, that's, you know, what I'm saying is slap on the wrist. Now he's back all of a sudden. I really honestly think that sometimes these punishments are not equitable. And I'm not saying that there does not need to be sanction. I'm not saying that Kyrie is not available for sanction, because again, when he signed that contract, he agreed to be a certain, to observe rules. Mm-hmm. He broke the rule. He deserves a punishment. But again, in this climate, it is wielded in a way that is, you know, he is made an example of, and I'm not saying that he does not need to be punished. I'm saying that he understood or did not understand by doing what he did that he would receive the type of punishment that he did.
Yeah, but I think, you know, again, this goes back to the need for education, particularly within our community, which is, you know, the whole concept of Holocaust denial.
Right.
These are just extremely fraught lands like that. Concept in general is an extreme no-no for anyone.
Absolutely.
If a white person had tweeted out something advocating Holocaust denial,
right.
I believe, and who can say theoretically, but I believe that would have drawn the ire of a whole lot of people, and they would have responded that they would have been subjected to an equal punishment as Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that. I mean, we can't ever prove it necessarily.
No.
But I think, you know, I just think we just tend to be less sensitive to where the lines are, because it has been so common within our community to make criticisms of the Jewish people under the umbrella of criticizing power structures, white supremacy, all of that. It's just all, you know, it's all a big
thing.
And we just get to just let it out and just talk about it amongst ourselves or within certain, you know, certain circles within the Black community. And then we try to come to the, you know, the greater, whatever, mainstream culture and discuss these things, and people shut us down.
Yeah.
And then we're wondering what's wrong. We're wondering what's going on. It's like, well, you may not fully be aware of the history here.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that education is the answer there. We have got to be educated beyond simply dealing with our own valid history of marginalization and suffering. Mm-hmm. But we've got to realize other people are fighting their own battles in this country. Other groups are fighting their own battles. And sometimes we have to be the ones to show some deference while still acknowledging, yes, the history of white supremacy, it bleeds over into, you know, every cultural and religious and ethnic mm-hmm. group. If they are, you know, as I said in the video, granted access to white supremacy, then yes, they are capable of wielding that
absolutely
against Black people.
Absolutely.
But we have to the whole point of the video is like, we got to be able to make that separation, call out the white supremacy, but not go after somebody based upon their ethnicity or their religion, because it just is going to do nothing but cause problems, and rightfully so.
Exactly. No, we don't want anybody going after our religion if we have a religion. You know, that's between us and our creator. You know, but the way that, you know, we act is another thing altogether. And like you say, under the umbrella of white supremacy, it must be stopped no matter where it's coming from, no matter who's wielding it. You know, it is dangerous. It's a cancer, you know, and it prohibits us from accessing what it is that we need to access as actualizing who we are, not just economically, but in the mind, you know, our wholeness and our mental health.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of people wanted to come through and kind of criticize, you know, well, you don't realize the wrong that's been done and blah, blah, blah. It's like at the end of that video, I expressly said entertainers specifically. Now we're talking about Kanye, you know, and some of the mm-hmm. Grievances that he's been airing. Mm-hmm. Entertainers will be more acutely aware of the wrongs that have been done historically in the world of entertainment. That's a world that we share.
Yeah.
You know, Jewish people have their own long and very rich history mm-hmm. in the world of entertainment, mm-hmm. as we do. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes the power dynamic within the world of entertainment has been, mm-hmm. you know, the Black person is here tap dancing, we're doing the shucking and jiving, mm-hmm. and there is someone who is making a lot more money than we are off of our work.
That's true.
And we are not necessarily aware of all the businesses going on behind the scenes and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's understandably because entertainment has been the way that a lot of Black folks have escaped their circumstances
Absolutely.
And their environments.
Absolutely. So still do.
We are extremely trained on that world, meaning our eyes are super focused on that world. And if we see certain patterns that have developed throughout the years, we're noticing the patterns and we are hyper aware of them. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I continue to reiterate the enemy is white supremacy.
Yeah.
You know, the enemy is not someone's ethnicity. The enemy is not someone's religion. Mm-hmm. Focus on the white supremacy and you will be heard. I'm a pragmatic person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, if we really want to be heard mm-hmm. and we really want progress to happen, then we have to understand if you keep putting your hand on the stove and it keeps burning you, then understand how to move forward without burning yourself
right.
and to accomplish the end that
right.
you're working towards. If it's not just about grievance culture and we just want to express how we've been wrong, but mm-hmm. we actually want things to be right. Mm-hmm. Then we have to learn how to express that in a way that's going to allow us to be heard. And we are not going to be heard. Mm-hmm. Coming after someone's ethnicity. You're never going to tear down the thing that you think you're going to tear down there.
Exactly.
Because then that would allow somebody to tear you down based upon your cultural identity.
And that's not
the goal.
It's been tried and it has failed. You know, the reverse coming to Black people and thankful that we've had, you know, freedom fighters that have made it not okay to belittle Black people and our culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not fancy. It's not exciting to embrace someone who's a pacifist or someone who uses laws, i.e. Martin Luther King, to get things done. Because there is a part of fight. There's a part of injustice. There's a part of pain that does not get soothed when you are not able to wield weaponry against someone who has attacked you.
Mm.
I have my own struggle with Martin Luther King's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I believe that he succeeded. Why did he succeed? Because number one, what is not commonly told, he did have audience with people who were in his community that felt different than he did. He talked to Stokely Carmichael. Stokely mm-hmm. Carmichael marched with him. Martin Luther King talked to Elijah Muhammad. It is not well known. He talked to him. He talked to Malcolm X. He talked to Mahatma Gandhi, who is not Black American, but who gave him the impetus for his nonviolent struggle. Martin Luther King sourced his strategies from different sources, not just from one. Mm-hmm. And he was able to evolve even in his nonviolent struggle, to be able to say, violence is wrong in Vietnam. It is also wrong here at home. I'm not just going to talk about one thing and have one strategy. As I learn more information, I am going to use this information and be more potent. And I have to give my hat off to him. He worked. He didn't achieve anything perfect. He even said, I have integrated my people into a burning house, because the way that integration was handled economically did not benefit African-American people. A lot of our businesses in Black American communities were cut down because, yes, we could get jobs in majority venues, but the interstate systems wove their way into our community. And then with us being able to, you know, be employed with majority corporations, a lot of our businesses went away. But I still say he knew the language of the land. And as flawed as the United States government is, that language is law. And when we vote and when we pass laws and when we express our grievances against white supremacy and we fight that accordingly, there is record that shows that the needle is moved. It's not perfect. It's not fixed, but it is advanced. And that's the way we advance it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that there is, you know, this, and I rarely put out any content that is critical of Black folks, because I feel like I just don't want to be that voice necessarily. You know, I feel like I need to be a bridge of understanding and helping other people to understand where we are coming from. So no, I don't feel the need to put out videos that chastise Black people for anything. I don't think I've ever put out a video that was critical of Black people. Can you think of one example where I've done that?
No.
I can't think of one.
No.
But this was the one exception. This was the one case. And because it knocked at my front door, and I felt that I was partly to blame for facilitating that. And I will say that I have such a love and respect for the Jewish culture that it was heartbreaking to me that my Jewish friends came to the comment section and saw that kind of thing going on in the name of something that I had put out.
But again, I have to say, your intent, your information was not to belittle anyone.
No, I mean, no, I don't think most people saw it that way.
And I feel like it is okay for someone to see what happened in there and to say, okay, but this still facilitated that. But you're allowed to say, with my best intention, my intent was not to harm or to hurt.
Well, I don't think intent is really that relevant, I have to say.
Okay.
I hold myself accountable for that. I don't think my intent, I mean, I know what my intent was, and you know what my intent yeah. was, and I would hope that most
To earn people, justice for Eric Monte.
Yeah, I mean, to tell his story properly, I would mm-hmm. hope that most people who pay attention to my content and who know the type of thing that I put out there,
yeah,
I would hope that most of them would never think that I would intentionally put out something that was pinpointing and inviting a bunch of folks who carry avarice in their hearts towards Jewish people. I would never willingly put out the dog whistle or light the fire or fan the flames or do anything of that sort. I would hope that they wouldn't think I would ever intend to do that. But the intent, I feel like a lot of times we get comfortable and we rely just a little bit too heavily on that intent piece. And it really doesn't make much of a difference when the ultimate result of something was harmful to someone else. Mm-hmm. I mean, we tell children that all the time. So you walk by somebody and you step on their foot mm-hmm. and they end up having to go to the doctor because they have a broken toe or something. And your intent doesn't change the fact that their toe is broken.
That's right. That's
so
right.
I do. I take responsibility for what I unintentionally facilitated. Fact that I didn't feel the need to be, I wasn't boxing in the comment section, even to the degree that I am now with this post. I was just letting them air it out. I was like, well, you know,
How much stupidity can you really engage with
before you become stupid? Yeah, I'm not wasting my time with this.
Don't engage with that. You don't engage with that. You know, those people are burnt out on their own. But I have to say, I applaud your courage. And if you felt like your job was to be able to call out something that is offensive to you as a human being, then that was courageous for you to step out, risking, you know, what you risk. You risked a lot, you know, and I still say you put that package together magnificently.
Thank you. I really
an army of
that.
One.
And the thing is that people I respect,
yeah,
I feel like have come along and said that, you know, and it's important to me that the Black community understands, you know, the spirit in which I put that out there, which is why it was heartening to me to see that P. Diddy posted. And I know he knows it's not the end all and be all. He knows there's more to the story. I love how folks came up under it. You didn't tell the whole story because blah, blah. It's like it's a 5-minute video. Now, come on.
And there is more to it.
It is very much skimming over the surface of what the real deep history is. It did not purport itself to be a full historical account. It was just like, it was a freaking Cliff's Notes, a primer, you know?
Yeah.
And we can't expect anyone to be getting their full history from TikTok or from Instagram.
But I would hope with that same thing that people would be vigilant on the African-American perspective. And something that you've taught me, we don't always look for reciprocation from folks that we do good. We do good and we keep moving. Mm-hmm. But when we need good done in our name, I would hope that the energy that you put out will return to you in your spirit.
And I will say, too, I've had reach outs from a few people within the Jewish community, and that, you know, it feels good. It feels positive. I've had reach outs from people within the Jewish community who have defended Kanye, who have defended some of what he said, and who have come to me and said, you know, I'm really working to communicate to my culture where people like Kanye are coming from, that there is some basis for the criticism that they are offering of our community.
This is still America. There is still white supremacy, and there is still a ceiling on Black creators if they are not fully independent, and sometimes if they are. It's just...
I'm just wondering why. I don't know. Kanye confuses me. I don't even really like to speak this man's name because I feel like he's such a narcissist.
I'm not a fan.
He feeds off of somehow in the ether.
Yeah.
He is being enlarged and emboldened because someone is speaking his name. But anyway, I'm just wondering what the issue is to him, why this is something he would even fixate on since he's made so many anti-Black statements himself. That's what irritates me. It's like, dude, you're not even fighting for us.
Exactly.
No kind of way. You done left Black people behind a long time ago.
Yeah.
So what is all this anti-Jewish stuff coming from? Are you telling me you're really that deeply concerned about the plight
of
Black folks in America?
It's the appearance of a Black person adopting white supremacy. And that's
so what is sickening. where does anti-Semitism fit within that? Is it anti-Semitism from the perspective of a white supremacist? Is that what you're saying?
That's what it appears to me.
And that's like absolutely disgusting.
That's what it appears to me. Because there has been apology to in earnest to Black people, and a lot of his friends that rock with them. I don't know what their side conversations are, or if he even reaches out to them anymore. But he hurt a lot of his friends who are in his same industry by not apologizing to Black people, and then to make this statement on top of that. No, I'm not saying that, but I understand the country that I'm in. And a person's the color of the skin, unfortunately, something systemically we did not create, unfortunately, can still be a barrier to achieving
many people would say, as you know.
And I ain't really talking about
barriers has Kanye dealt with. The dude's a billionaire.
Really talking about
or at least he was until he screwed up his own game.
I ain't really talking about
him. He's a billionaire. To me, what he's doing is coming off so utterly ridiculously. We know that he deals with mental health struggles.
Yeah.
But it's like, dude, if anybody has met, it's one thing if you're speaking out for people who are still in the struggle.
Yeah.
I get it. But like to try and paint yourself as being personally victimized.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really here for it.
I get that.
But I will say, and it's not for me to be lecturing and scolding the Jewish community about, you know, what they need to be doing. But I am going to be doing a podcast with a Jewish creator. He's a comedian who reached out, and he's Orthodox Jewish, and said that he wanted to have a conversation because he's been trying to have conversations with people within his community about this kind of thing and bridging this kind of weird divide, and encouraging Jewish people to be more receptive and to be more open to understanding what the grievances within the Black community are with Jewish folks. And so he wants to have a conversation. And I feel like a lot of those conversations should be happening between them. I say between, it's not necessarily for
us to
feel like it's our place
to straighten anybody,
to straighten them out in that regard. That's I feel like it is necessary, just like it's necessary for us to be talking between ourselves and to be talking to our own people and calling this stuff out where we see it. There's a lot that needs to be called out within that community. I agree. You even brought up the idea of there being some sort of formal apology for Jewish participation in the slave trade yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't care whether it's 5%, 4%, 3%, you know, $1 is too much to fund the most atrocious human chattel slavery in the history of mankind. There has been no apology to Black Americans for that. We have received no reparations from our U.S. government. And at this rate, we likely, it's highly unlikely. That doesn't mean that we stop asking. And that doesn't mean that we stop saying what it is that we feel that we're entitled to. That would go a long way, honestly, with dismantling the white supremacy and repairing the grievance. Mm-hmm. Because this stuff doesn't come out of the thin air. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are hurting, they may not express it the way that you want them to express it, but they're coming from a very real place. Mm-hmm. And they're coming from a historical perspective that can be traced. And to deny them, and to not deny that, is say, you don't exist. Mm-hmm. You don't matter. And that's not gonna fly with this generation.
I think, though, I will say a lot of where we go wrong is in where we are getting our information. Because, yes, there was Jewish participation in the transatlantic slave trade, that there was investment in. Jewish people did fund Columbus's first venture into the New World. And, yeah, you can trace the history there. But when we start getting our information from these dubious sources and repeating these phony stats that we're just pulling from anywhere and everywhere, it's like we need to stay informed. We need to inform ourselves, but it needs to be good information from well-sourced, you know, academic journals and research that has been done that's on the up and up, not just some, you know, YouTube video that we found where someone's, you know, in their basement with their Friday Night Live show, you know, that's getting us all juiced up. It's like, yeah. We need to come and be able to express exactly the history that exists, but we need to do it accurately. Mm-hmm. That's my admonition to us. It's like, just because you heard somebody say it and somebody else repeated it and another person repeated it does not mean that it is historically accurate.
That's right.
There is so much disinformation within our community around this topic. And again, like I said, I'm not into coming out after someone's religious beliefs.
Me either.
That is a losing battle and it's one that never ends.
Yeah.
So I'm not here to dispel the myths about who were the real Hebrews and all of this stuff. But I will say, let's be well studied and let's do that with a variety of sources where we are really accurately vetting the information that we are taking in. Because just because you heard somebody say it with conviction and you've heard a bunch of people repeat it doesn't mean it's necessarily true. You know, let's make sure that we are, as scripture says, rightly dividing the word of truth. Because that, you know, that makes us stronger in our stance against, again, white supremacy. That makes us stronger in our stance if we are coming from a place of true knowledge rather than just repeating things that we've heard other people say.
Yeah. And sometimes getting their words wrong.
The stuff I have seen in the comments.
Anyhow.
The stuff I have seen in the comments is enough to just curl your toes. It's embarrassing to me. And I'm like, can we just get some wisdom? Can we get some wisdom? Mm-hmm. It's all right. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to make stuff up. There's enough horrible things that have happened that are accurate.
Yeah.
We don't have to make the stuff up, you know, let's be truthful.
I'm sure there will still be some folks, you know, finding the video and whatnot. But again, your place has been a place of enlightenment. And as you've learned, you've shared. And I think that's what the best that we can expect from anyone is not to keep, you know, information to yourself. You know, when you learn, when you are enlightened, you share and you ask questions. You know, you have asked questions to your friends, you know, Jewish people, Black people, white people, you know, you've sought to get informed and sought to be a source for wisdom and knowledge. And it's okay if someone doesn't agree, but the thoroughness from which you communicate in a short amount of time, the main thing is it should lead people to ask questions. And I think it definitely does that to reason in their own mind and not just accept, you know, anything face value.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, I think misinformation and disinformation are the scourge of our culture, of our world at this point. I was just watching a little clip of Trevor Noah and President Obama, who were having this conversation about the dangers of disinformation. So this is my little drop in the bucket in this particular, you know, with regard to this particular subject. To just say, you know what, there are some of us who are interested in getting this right. We want to call out what needs to be called out, but we are not down with the foolishness. We are not down with victimizing other people in the way that we have been victimized. We are seeking true knowledge. We're seeking true understanding and hopefully ultimately healing.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
With the dismantling of white supremacy.
Yes, of course. That's what my whole page is about.
Mm-hmm.
My whole online presence has been devoted to that.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, check my record. That's what I say. Check my record to understand what I'm down with. I don't accept the criticism that suddenly I'm anti-Black for telling Black folks that it's not okay to hate Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
No. If you are the type of person who gets offended because I say something like that, then you're not my type of person. You ain't my people. This ain't your page. Mm-hmm. This isn't your thing to follow. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Not sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sorry. I have the deepest love possible for my Jewish brothers and sisters. It's funny because Greg and I were raised very differently. I was raised in a church environment that really idolized Jewish culture. So I never was exposed to people who had this, who carried this animosity towards Jewish people. And I went to college and was around people, went to a Christian college and was around people who showed animosity for Catholicism and called that the great Satan and all this stuff. I wasn't raised with that. It's like between religions, at least religions that claimed a love for Jehovah, I did not understand even the concept of interfaith bickering and battling and hatred. And it just never has made sense to my brain at all.
Yeah. You cannot hate Jewish people and love Jesus. That's number one.
That's powerful.
And number two, if we're talking about one creator and one supreme God, that is expressed, if you have a religion that subscribes to that, that is expressed in Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. So as we were taught to have reverence and regard for all of those religions and more, because ultimately that's a person's communication with God. Who am I to tell someone how to believe? Jesus didn't make me believe in him. That was my choice. So what my relationship with God or anyone else's or anyone's who says that there is no God, right? That's their personal conviction. And as long as we can agree on civility and humanity and anti-white supremacy, we're cool. But I don't accept white supremacy, and we should not from any source. And it is wrong, as you have stated, to use those same tools against someone else on the basis of their faith or lack of faith. Now, my favorite time, because I get to hear from you directly, finding your voice. This is my favorite part of the show. always has been. Sometimes I ask myself, why am I even here? Because I want to get to finding your voice. It's always something fresh that I can use. Other people have, you know, voiced the benefits of it as well. You come from your special place. Maybe we'll just do one whole episode that's just finding your voice, and we'll get to sit in your meditations about life and how to find and unearth what it is special about each of us that we can contribute to the world.
I laughed at the thought that it might turn out this way. Where's that one I wish that I threw aside after
Finding Your Voice segment, I want to talk about what it means to grow older as we're pursuing our dreams. It can be a very interesting thing once we get to a certain age to assess what our relationship is with our dreams. Kind of depending on how your life is situated and the decisions that you've made and where you find yourself at a particular time in life, you may or may not even feel like you have access to those dreams anymore. It may seem like you've gotten to the point where they are irrelevant, or you may have children that you've now passed those dreams down to, or you've placed your hopes in them, that maybe they will achieve the dreams that you never could. But for those people who are still pushing and aspiring to do the thing that is in your heart to do, I want to talk to you guys, and I want to talk to myself at the same time. It's a very interesting thing that our dreams tend to shift and grow with us as we get older. I think about what I used to want to be when I was, 16, let's say 13, 14, 15 years old. I wanted to be an actress. That's what I thought my future was going to be. And I was a country bumpkin in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, would have had absolutely no connections, no ability to do that. But I was just hoping against hope that somehow my life would open up and create this world for me that I only saw in the movies and I only saw on television. Well, of course, that did not happen. It didn't happen in the way that I thought it would. But I would say even in the last few years, the thing that has blossomed up and opened up for me is this platform, is social media, is TikTok, is Instagram. It's sharing my views and my thoughts about so many different things, and even the films and television that I grew up loving. That wasn't an expectation that I would have had or even understood at that age. But I feel like the whole idea and the concept of holding those dreams in your heart and on some level, I would say, never letting them go. I mean, in the United States, we have such an optimism about achievement and dreaming, and you can do anything. And if you just believe in yourself and put your heart into it and don't let anyone tell you that you can't succeed. And there are times, to be frank, to be as frank as I possibly can be, there are times when we do need to let certain things go. And we have to be sensitive to when it is time to just let it go. It is not always the right thing to do to hold on to your expectations or your dreams about how you thought your life was supposed to go. And if you've gotten, to the age of being a full grown human being, that's something that you probably understand full well. But I will say, we have to be open to how our dreams can shift and evolve and become something that we never thought that they might be, or we never would have known that those dreams could have evolved into. I became a singer. I never would have expected to become a singer. And that the field that I'm in, which is jazz, or the genre that I'm in, which is jazz, is amenable to older singers. A lot of the singers that are on top of the world in jazz, or the top of their game in jazz, are, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old. People can have very long careers in that genre. And so I intentionally moved myself to a place where I could grow and blossom. And I think, you know, I don't even think I necessarily did what I did in a very calculated way. But I was always sort of looking for that opening, looking for that place of acceptance, looking for that place that made the most sense for me, considering the skill set that I had, considering the interests that I had. And I did the same thing when I made the transition to putting this type of content on social media, putting more social commentary on social media. It was like, I'm looking for the avenues where I can express who I am, where I can coalesce all of these different parts of myself and talk about things that interest me and excite me. And, you know, I was always pushing. I have always been pushing to find that way that makes sense to express myself and to find who my people were. And I remember even before I put up like the first, one of the first viral videos that I put up on TikTok, I looked at Greg and I said, I know that my people are out there. I know that they are there and they are going to be receptive and open to finding me. I just don't know how to reach them. I don't know what messages are going to reach them. I don't know what it is that they're looking for. I don't know the thing that I need to say, because I would look at other people who inspired me, who were finding their people. And it was a very kind of a, you know, a frustrating experience, but it was something that I always felt was possible. And it's interesting that certain doors are opening. Hopefully we'll be able to share some exciting news in the next few weeks about a couple of doors that have opened recently. But it's just interesting to see the types of doors that open as I invest more of myself and I grow into who I am at the age that I am, and embrace the gift that I have in the space that I'm in. If I were sitting around still worried about being a famous actress at this point, I would be living a very frustrated life. I would be very frustrated and I would be banging my head against a wall, potentially trying to make something happen that didn't make a whole lot of sense for me. But I'm having to be open to what my particular acclimation and my gifts are bringing about and are bringing forth in my life. So I want to provide encouragement to you all to understand that if you have visions and goals and desires and dreams that you've held in your heart for a long time, be open to how those things can shift and evolve and become something that you maybe didn't think that they could be. Just be open. It's not even necessarily for you to identify exactly what it is. Oh, is this the thing? You may not even know what the thing will be until the platform. I mean, for me, it was like TikTok didn't even exist. How would I know that putting my content on TikTok was going to be a way for me to reach my audience when TikTok didn't exist until 2019? So sometimes, you know, we're waiting for the thing and for the world to catch up with what it is that we're supposed to be doing. So just continue to hold that thing in your heart. Continue to even if it's just, if it's quiet, if you're pursuing singing, pursuing music, you know, you're playing out in very small venues, you're going to open mic nights, you're going to writer's nights, you're doing whatever you can to keep that flame alive and continue to fan it. And making sure that it doesn't die out, because there is going to be some point at which that thing will be useful to your future, just maybe not in the exact way that you think it will be. So I'm Dara Star Tucker, Dara with one R, Star with two. This has been the I'm All Over the Place podcast. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time.